Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host, and I just want to say thank you to Don Newsom at BBS Radio and Seth for all their hard work over there, just raising consciousness with all the great shows that they provide, and I want to thank them for bringing Spiritual Hollywood to the world and giving us this platform to raise consciousness using Hollywood. Now, I have a guest this evening that is very used to interviewing people and not being interviewed, so this will be a lot of fun. It's Barry Kibrick, and if you would like to pull up a website where you can learn more about Barry, being that this is internet radio, go to www.klcs.org. That's www.klcs.org. And I'd like to encourage anyone to call in, if you choose to, at the following numbers. Toll-free in the U.S. only, 877-876-5227. And in Canada only, that would be 888-815-9756. And the direct line there would be 530-876-3222, and that's the station. I'll give you a little bit of background on Barry, and then when we bring him on, we'll get a whole lot more background on Barry. He is the host and producer of the six-time Emmy-nominated series Between the Lines. Between the Lines features in-depth interviews with distinguished authors, celebrity writers, top screenwriters, directors, and award-winning columnists and journalists. Between the Lines is now in its 12th season and is produced at PBS station KLCS-TV in Los Angeles. The series airs on PBS stations throughout the country. Combining passion, insight, and creativity, Barry Kibrick presents the material in the most engaging and entertaining manner possible through his ability to see and read between the lines, and that he does, on any topic and share it with others. His distinct, personal, thought-provoking method of conversation brings a refreshingly new style to the genre, oftentimes even surprising the guests with his deep understanding of their work. The results are an intense and entertaining personal relationship between the material, the guests, the viewers, and Barry Kibrick. Barry's guests have included Anne Rice, Mario Puzo, Ray Bradbury, Queen Noor of Jordan, Sir Ridley Scott, Secretary of State Warren Christopher, Kirk Douglas, Jackie Collins, Alvin Toffler, Elmore Leonard, Sidney Sheldon, Secretary of Labor Robert Reich, Presidential Advisor Dick Morris and Sidney Blumenthal, Joseph Wambach, Richie Havens, Chaka Khan, all right, Chaka Khan, Erica Jong, Walter Mosley, John Wooden, Cal Ripken Jr., and on the other page we have hundreds of others. In Los Angeles, Between the Lines airs on PBS stations KLCS-TV Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. and Sunday and Tuesday nights at 11 p.m. Without further ado, I'd love to bring on for you Barry Kibrick. Hello, Barry.
Hi, Kate.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
It's my pleasure.
Wonderful, wonderful to have you. There's so much more I could say about you in an introduction, and I wanted to save some wonderful morsels for our listeners to hear out of your own mouth.
Well, any more, Kate, I don't think I could take it.
Wow. Well, there's quite a bit more to you, and there's one thing that I'm fascinated by about your gift that you have. You are able to take a body of work, be it a screenplay, a novel, any kind of book at all. It doesn't matter what it is. Even if it's a column you read in a newspaper, and you're able to, with laser vision, read between the lines and find what the author of that work was really, really trying to say from their heart and soul. Is that correct?
You know, if you say so, I would love to think that that's what I do, yes.
I think that's what you do, because you did it to me, too. And I was stunned and shocked by what your response was to a couple of essays that I wrote and sent to you. And what you sent me back was something that moved, touched, and inspired me about myself. And I was not expecting that. And it was really, really wonderful. And I'm now feeling differently about my intentions in the essays that I wrote. So, you know, and it's a lot for me to chew on, because I feel like after you sent me back those very brief, you're a man of a few words, very brief responses, they went straight to my heart, and are blossoming inside of me, if that makes any sense.
Well, it does, and I'm so grateful. And yet at the same time, I must tell you, even I'm sometimes surprised by that, because in your writing, it seemed so almost evident to me. I'm just honored that and grateful that I was able to draw out things that you weren't even aware of that you put in, but you did really put in so much, and that's what I really enjoy doing with my authors, and my viewers really enjoy seeing, is the surprise almost and the pleasure that the authors themselves get when they have an opportunity to get that kind of feedback that they're not expecting.
Yes, and I've seen some footage of your show, and I've actually watched the author wiggle around in their seat with inner glee by the words they were hearing come out of your mouth, because you so got them. And that's really a pleasure to watch, and that's why you're a six-time Emmy-nominated series. And that's why, who knows what's going to happen next, and I'm thinking maybe some Emmys will be lining your shelves pretty soon.
Well, that will be sweet, but the greatest pleasure I get is just hearing comments like this from you and my authors and my viewers, and I'll take that over 1,000 Emmys.
Aw, that's wonderful. Gee, see, you know just what to say. You do.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
That's why they pay you the big bucks, yes. So when you were 24, you were one of the youngest anchormen for the ABC-affiliated stations where you began at KIMO-TV in Anchorage, Alaska, right?
Yes, one of the great experiences of my life. I was blessed to have this opportunity. One of the great newsmen of all time, a man named John Valentine, brought me in, and it was a thrill. Here I was, this person just off the street, literally, and he really taught me a tremendous amount about the business. And to be a young person like that, I was one of the first people ever to cover the entire Iditarod race that people might know of, the famous 1,400-mile dog sled race.
Mm.
And it was just one of the most thrilling things for a young person. And sometimes there's a drawback to that, though, and that was that, you know, you get almost a sense of success that's a little greater than you really should have.
Mm-hmm.
And you sometimes have to then backtrack a little bit, because it was really stunning for me to just get out of college and be this person on TV. And then you realize that, wow, you get this vision of yourself. You sometimes have to trim that down a little bit.
Mm.
It's kind of a funny dichotomy that occurs when that happens. But it was such a thrill, and to this day, as my wife will say, make some of the best stories you've ever heard. One day I'll actually share the story sometime with you on how I got hired. It's fantastic.
Oh, wonderful. And your lovely wife of 25 years is Betty Lou?
Yes, she is.
Hello, Betty Lou. I hope you're listening.
I'm sure she is.
Yeah. She's just fantastic, and she comes with you to every show, doesn't she?
Every single show that I've ever made, she's been by my side.
How many shows do you think you've made?
Well, just of my own show, Between the Lines, I've made close to 400 of them now.
Mm.
And but I've produced and directed so many shows, and still produce and direct so many shows. And any of the major shows that I've ever been involved with, she's always been there. And with Between the Lines, she's actually an integral part of the entire process.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's there to greet the guests, and literally we lubricate them before they even come on the show, and it really works. We're a great team, and
oh,
we've been together since the moment we met.
Yes, I know. I was enjoying that lovely story when you, Betty Lou, myself, and my lovely sweetheart John got together for a dinner, and to hear how you two have been inseparable since the day you met is such a success story about relationship. And it was not really evident to you right at first, but it became evident to you very shortly thereafter that this woman was going to be in your life for a very long time.
Yes, and it was evident to her immediately, though.
Yes, I know.
That's what makes women so much better than us men.
That's what gives me such a giggle, is that she absolutely knew, and it's absolutely true, and you're living that today. And you've got two children?
I don't say two children. I have
two grown
men.
Up. Huh?
I have two men.
Yes, you do. You have two men. And one of them is a filmmaker, is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
And the other is a teacher.
Oh, and then what is he teaching?
He's teaching, he just got his first teaching assignment in the Los Angeles School District.
Great.
And he's going to be teaching high school history and social studies to a brand new high school, in fact. So it's a real wonderful, we're all very excited. And he's engaged to be married, and he's going to be married in a year from yesterday.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations on all that good news. So there'll be some grandchildren coming soon.
Well, hopefully at least after the marriage, yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely protocol. And so you were the executive producer for, not only the producer of Those Two Lovely Men, but you were the executive producer for the ABC Late Night series Into the Night.
Correct.
What was that like for you?
Wow, that was a daily live comedy series.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience was unbelievable. I was very fortunate. I had a tremendous staff and crew that was able to really pull this off day after day after day. And it was probably, on a physical level and an emotional level, the hardest job I ever had.
Mm.
It was really intense, but it was exciting. It was, and in fact, it's kind of funny, but it was my first network job and my last network job. So it turned out just perfect.
Right, right. So how long did that go on the air? How long was that on?
Well, it went on as originally as Into the Night, and
mm-hmm.
that went on for about, I believe it was like 13 weeks, and then we did like another 26 weeks of it called Studio 59. We changed the name as we changed the staff and changed everything around. So.
Right, right. And so the demographic for that show was predominantly what age group?
I would say that was, we skewed a lot younger at that time. That
mm-hmm.
was, we were also a lot younger at that
yeah.
time. So we
True.
Were probably going for the 18 to 34, as they say in the Nielsen ratings.
Mm, okay. And so your show airs on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. and Sunday and Tuesday nights at 11 p.m. And the website that I gave, which is www.klc, as in cat, s, as in Sam, .org, is where people can see where your show will air in their part of the world, right?
Yeah, they'll see more about where that airs in L.A., and they can reach me through that website,
mm-hmm.
or they could even contact me directly at my own email address if they want. If you, it's just my name,
uh-huh.
BarryKibrick@AOL.com.
And that's
but either one they can reach me through.
That's great. That's very generous of you. Barry is B-A-R-R-Y. Kibrick is K-I-B-R-I-C-K. @AOL.com, BarryKibrick@AOL.com. Wonderful. I'll give the numbers again in case anyone would like to call in and ask questions or make comments. That's toll-free in the U.S. only, 877-876-5227. And in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And at the station, it's 530-876-3222. So, what gave you the idea for Between the Lines, Barry? How did that come about?
I was, again, you know how everything is just being at the right moment and the right time.
Yeah,
I did,
dress up and show up.
I did a show. I was a vice president of a company that created a show, and it was called The Sci-Fi Trader on the Sci-Fi Channel at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was looking at the show, we noticed that one of the things that people were most interested in were the signed copies of books.
Hmm.
Then I had a woman that I worked for many years at NBC TV called Carol Cartwright.
Uh-huh.
She became the general manager of a PBS station out of Chicago, WYCC.
Mm-hmm.
And when she did, she loved working with me, and she said, listen, I've got a time slot open, and I'd love you to fill it. And do you have anything that would be right for PBS? And I said, well, I do remember we did a show, and I remember books being so popular. Would you want me to do a book show? I'll, you know, bring in the right people, and we'll do a book show,
mm-hmm.
and we'll give it to you. And just tell me the budget. And she said, oh, no, you don't understand. We have the time, but we don't have money.
Ah.
So as any good producer, when you get the time, you don't want to mess up on that opportunity.
Yeah.
So I said, well, okay, I'll put the money up. And, of course, to save money, I hired myself. And that's how it really began. It began in Chicago
mm-hmm.
on WYCC with the permission of Carol Cartwright, who I still love and adore.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the most wonderful producer. In fact, you know, you talk about, I know on your show, very spiritual things, and my producer was how I met my wife.
Right, you were sharing that story with us.
Yes.
Mind sharing that with our listeners a bit?
And, yeah, well, it was at his birthday that I met my wife, and he used to work for me on that other show you talked about, plus many other shows.
Yes.
And I brought Joel in, and Joel, his name is Joel Bailey, and he was able to bring my very first guest. Think of this. All I am is a small PBS station in Chicago, and he was able to get Mario Puzo as my first guest on my show.
Oh, amazing.
And he followed it up with guests like Ray Bradbury. I mean, it was just going, he was just that wonderful. And that gave me enough momentum, and then we went through so many machinations, but that was basically how it got started. And then we kept it going. And now the people at KLCS-TV, my program director, Sabrina Thomas, and Janilyn Glimpf, the general manager, they really saw how wonderful the show could be for them. And the arrangement we have is just fantastic. I produce many of their shows and direct many of their other shows. And in turn, I get to continue to do my show Between the Lines. And it's been a great experience for everyone involved.
That's fantastic. How many days a week are you in the studio?
Well, I'm usually in the studio. Well, I'm in the studio almost every day, but not doing Between the Lines. Between the Lines I do, depending on how we're structured, anywhere between once a month to four times a month.
Ah, okay.
And I tape a couple of episodes each time I'm in the studio.
And what was your absolute, I know you love all your guests, there's no question about that, I just want to preface this next comment with that. You totally love all your guests, and I know there was one guest you had on in particular who you made the mistake of talking to before the show and interviewing him basically in your conversation before the show, and then when you got him on the show, you asked him a question, and he said, didn't we just talk about that a while ago? So that was one of your guests did that. And what I'm about to ask next is, who was your absolute favorite guest far in almost 400 shows?
I'll tell you, that is so difficult to answer. I will tell you a few things I feel comfortable with, and maybe because the person has passed away, and therefore I feel I have a little license on it.
Uh-huh.
One of the specials I've just did, in fact, for the station was with a fellow named John O'Donohue.
Mm.
And I'll tell you, if you have spiritual people out there who want to truly get an essence of a man so deep in spirit, his books, Beauty is one of them, and his other book, To Bless the Space Between Us.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you right now, if everyone just reads To Bless the Space Between Us by John O'Donohue,
I'm writing that down.
They will see solace in almost any situation of difficulty that they face.
Wow, and we
but
all
I must
need...
tell you, I have, as I say, I'm comfortable using John because he is no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I would almost feel like I'm cheating some of my authors because I've really been privileged to meet some of the greatest minds on the planet.
Right.
And have interchanges with them and conversations on the deepest of subjects. So to really, I refuse to name a living one.
Yes. So the reason that John O'Donohue was one of your very favorite guests is because of the way he was able to weave the message of finding solace in the greatest adversity into the tapestry of the book To Bless the Space Between Us. And that's what you loved about that interview?
And, well, actually, believe it or not, he died right when that book was published. I had the privilege of interviewing and conversing with Mike Farrell. Do you remember Mike Farrell from NASH?
Yes.
And he was a good friend of John's, and he was willing to come on the show and not play the role of John by any means, but
right. We
literally swapped blessings. And it is, in fact, if you go to the www.klcs.org,
yes,
you can get this opportunity to see the show that me and Mike did, followed immediately by my conversation with John on his book, Beauty.
Mm.
And between the two of them, I am certain that your listeners will just reap benefits beyond their own imagination.
Right, right. And there's an archive that the listeners can click on and watch those episodes?
Nah, it's not that easy. But if they go to the website, they'll figure it out, or they can contact me, and I'll make sure
Great.
That we make it available.
That's
to them.
Wonderful. And that's www.klcs.org.
Correct.
And that would be the interview with Mike Farrell and
John O'Donohue.
That's wonderful. Now, Barry, I'm curious about something. I have a ferocious curiosity, and I'm just really, really curious about that part of you that you don't want people to see, that you kind of cover up, that part of you that loves humanity to the point that you almost don't know what to do with it. And what you do with this show, Between the Lines, in my opinion, is designed to help people get a clue of their greatness when they sit in front of you and are interviewed, and present that to the world to inspire others by that person's greatness. And in so doing, I want to tell you that for me, all I see in you is your greatness.
Well, I what can I say to that except, you know, thank you.
You're welcome.
I am so appreciative of that. I obviously want every viewer to see the show. My wife and I, we have a little motto.
Mm-hmm.
We want every viewer who tunes in on any episode at any time to leave with two things.
Yes.
One, they are smarter when they leave. They are more knowledgeable and more wise when they leave that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they feel better about themselves.
Yes.
Those are the two main goals, and those are the two things we strive for, no matter what the topic is.
Mm-hmm.
That's my mission, is to leave the viewer with those two feelings.
And you know what I think, too, is that you and Betty Lou also leave with those two feelings.
Oh, I am the biggest beneficiary of my show. No, there's no doubt about it. I am the biggest beneficiary. My life, because of what I've done, I am the one that is most transformed.
Mm-hmm.
So I, in a sense, it's a very selfish motive.
No, I understand completely. That's exactly what I get out of my show, Spiritual Hollywood. And, you know, it's like you are a perfect fit for Spiritual Hollywood, because I see that the media, for me, is, I believe, if it's not being used to help raise consciousness, I believe that it's being misused. And I believe that it's the most powerful form of communication that we have, and not to use the media to help raise consciousness, relieve misery and suffering, leave people with more wisdom, leave people feeling better about themselves than they did before they tuned in, is exactly what I endeavor to do with Spiritual Hollywood. And the fact that you do that very same thing with your show, your series, Between the Lines, makes you a perfect fit for this show. And what you're doing may not occur to the viewers as a spiritual thing or as personal development, and I see that it is. And anything that is supporting and uplifting and showing people that they can be, have, and do more than they ever dreamed of by presenting people who have done exactly that on your show, including yourself, to me, that's really good use of the media.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And at the same time, though, I do remember the great Samuel Goldwyn, who said, hey, leave the message for Western Union. We still have to entertain. And I do think that if you do that correctly, it also is very entertaining. And so the nicest thing, I remember when growing up, everyone used to say the golden age of Hollywood and the media was in the 50s, you know,
mm-hmm.
from Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver. But the truth is, right now, in my opinion, with all of the talent and that we have out there, I am really seeing just a tremendous amount of quality media, whether it's radio, television, internet radio, books,
mm-hmm.
the media right now, I'm proud of it. I really see, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's always going to be junk on there that is just for prurient interest.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really so many good shows on even the mass media networks, on the cable stations. It's really a plethora to choose from. And we really are, I think, in a high point of media right now. And I'm just glad to be a part of it.
Yes, I agree with you. And one of the things that I do as a talent manager also, and representing wonderful visionary actors, is I help them to be placed in projects that do uplift, that are transformative, that are going to make a difference, even if they're just high entertainment, live action, or whatever it is. Even the show Ghost Whisperer, are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes, beautiful show, and it does that wonderfully.
It does, and so does Medium.
Oh, but I'll even take it even into the more popular mainstream stuff.
Which ones?
I'll tell you right now. So You Think You Can Dance. I'm telling you,
yes.
You watch that show, and you will see that everyone on that show is striving for a higher consciousness.
Yes.
They're doing the best they can to bring a new medium of dance to the public.
Yes.
They do so, and it's just a classic reality show. I mean, it's number 3 or 4 in the ratings, and it's people vote and all that. I know it has all of that reality and game show TV surrounding
it. And inspiring,
it, but it really does pack a very powerful message, and it's inspiring. So these things can come in very many packages,
yes.
And I love that.
Yeah, good point. And we have a caller. Caller, what's your name?
Woody.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, who am I speaking with?
Woody.
Hi, Woody. Welcome to the show.
Big fan of the Between the Lines show, I tell you.
Yeah?
And my question is, I know he's had some great interviews, but was Sidney Sheldon pretty special? Did he help out the show?
You know something? I am going to tell you a Sidney Sheldon story you're not going to believe. I'll tell you how special Sidney Sheldon is, okay? I had Sidney Sheldon on as one of my first guests. Remember I told you this Joel Bailey was able to get me the major authors. You know what? I was in a small station in Chicago. He was able to get them.
Mm-hmm.
When I was done with Sidney Sheldon, he and I had such a relationship develop over just that 30 minutes. And I was, at that time, we were just starting out. I couldn't even get some of the shows out of the post-production facilities. That's how much financially we were hurting.
Mm.
Sidney Sheldon didn't say anything. He just said, leave it to me. And he just literally left the show and cut me a check. A check that, by the way, if your rich uncle gave you, you'd be grateful for.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's not enough I can possibly say about Sidney Sheldon. He was so beautiful, it was unbelievable. And by the way, then here's a perfect example. Look at the shows he did. People would laugh at. What were they? I Dream of Jeannie?
Yes.
But you know something? Watch those shows Between the Lines, and you'll see the spirit of Sidney Sheldon come out.
Absolutely.
I'm tearing up just thinking about it right
Aww.
Now.
So thank
he
you
was
for
he was just amazing, and I'm again just so thankful for him.
Aw, wonderful. Well, he certainly saw something to believe in you and what you were doing.
Well, you know, you always want that to be the other side of the equation. But,
yes, absolutely. Or wouldn't it
I leave that for others to make those conclusions.
Yeah, well, you did have something to do with that. Caller, did you have another question?
No, just keep up the great show.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much, Woody.
Thanks for calling, Woody.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a great evening. Wonderful. Well, you know what we were saying about So You Think You Can Dance being a reality show, and reality shows are really popular right now, and, you know...
By the way, what do we do as reality shows, too, you know?
Yes, yes, they are. And one show that we represent the lead interventionist on is Intervention on A&E TV, which is... they do interventions on people who are afflicted with addictions of all kinds, and even video game addiction, you name it. And when all...
Oh, wait a minute. You got to be careful now. You're talking to a father of two very big gamers, so...
Well, I'm sure. Well, you know, I can give you the interventionist phone number if you need it, but it's...
No.
Okay.
I must tell you, I also, even with video games, I see them through my son's eyes, and I am convinced that... They too play as big a role of if you look at them carefully, if you watch them for the right reasons, if you play them and interact with them with the soul and spirit that one should do everything in life, they are as filled with goodness and blessings as anything. You just have to watch them that way and be absorbed in them in that way.
I agree with you. And it's the video games that have the violence where there's, like, decapitation and lots of blood that... I never did let my son play with those games.
You know something, I wasn't a censor in that regard. As long as there's sometimes, I remember when I was a kid growing up, and we didn't have any video games of that sort. But, you know, we sat out there and we watched combat on TV and the Lone Ranger, and we played Indians and cowboys and mm-hmm. Nazis and good guys, and we shot up and threw bombs, and we did all of those things. And I sometimes think, especially young men, to have an outlet like that where they can almost vicariously get rid of some of their aggression or do that. I'm not as most people, when they see my show, they would think that I would be a big someone who would be so against that kind of stuff. But I'm really not. I see value in that. Again, when you are brought up in a good family and with good surroundings, and like they say, it takes a village, if you have the community and the people around you, sometimes those things are not a negative at all, and they really can be a positive influence on people. I know that sometimes clashes with a lot of people's feelings. You know, I don't let my kids play with guns. I don't let my kids play with video games. As I do have a different take on that.
And you know why you have a different take on that?
Well, one thing is I am a guy from the 50s and 60s, so that could be the reason.
Well, that could be one reason, and another reason is it's because you see everything from between the lines.
Well, that's probably the truth.
Yes. So what you just said helped me to look at it again and to see the sense that you just made, because, you know, we did come from cavemen, and we've become
right.
a little more civilized over the thousands of years, and... the most recent biggest change from cavemen was the ability to speak. So, you know, a lot of people don't really speak a lot today, like you enjoyed your interview with Alison Armstrong, who does the Making Sense of Men.
Right.
And one thing that she talks about is that, you know, the one it's only been 40,000 years since cavemen finally learned to use language. So it's no wonder men and women don't talk to each other.
Well,
so, you know, that's part of her philosophy is, you know, cavemen and cavewomen coming from human animal to human spirit by use of communication and using it properly and using it in an upward spiral, setting each other up to win and using it for good. And that is totally possible. And what brings that up is when you're saying that it's good for boys to have an outlet for their aggression, being that it's, you know, we do come from cavemen and cavewomen, there's a good point there. And when young boys are going through puberty, they have tons of testosterone and angst and all of that. So I'm revisiting that whole scenario after you just said that so you can have another way to look at it, because I like to live life outside of a box and not inside of a box.
Well, that's testament to what you do, Kate.
Oh, thanks. And you too. So thanks for bringing that to our listeners' attention, to my attention, of that other way to see it. And it's very nonconformist of you to say exactly how you feel, which is what makes you a great interviewer.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So how does it feel to be interviewed?
Boy, you know, I didn't realize how much fun this could be.
I thought you would enjoy it.
I do.
Yeah. So I will give out the call-in numbers again in case others would like to call in. And the U.S. only toll-free, it's 877-876-5227. And Canada only is 888-815-9756. And at the station, the direct line is 530-876-3222. I'll give the website again if you're just joining us. It's www.klcs.org, and just go to that site and take a look around and check out what Barry Kibrick has been up to. And I'd just like to discuss with you a little bit or a lot the NATPE Iris Award. You made history when you were nominated for three series for that.
Yeah, we actually won for all three series.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a real treat. The NATPE is the National Association of Television Programming Executives. They put on the big, I guess they call it convention, when all the programmers get together.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we were very lucky to be nominated for three different series we were doing, one of them Between the Lines.
Yes.
And we did. We won the award for all three of them, and it was very exciting.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So if you could do anything you want, let's say, I know that you're doing what you want, and I'm looking into a crystal ball and saying, if Barry could do whatever Barry wanted to and there were absolutely no limits to anything, what would you be doing for your next project? You may be doing it in combination with Between the Lines and everything else you're doing as well, because you can have it all. What would you add to this wonderful mix of things that you're doing? What would you add next if you could just do anything you wanted, anything at all? What would that be?
You know, in a sense, this is going to sound strange. I would take away things rather than add.
Oh, interesting.
I would, because what I would love to do is I would love to be able to do Between the Lines even more than I'm doing it.
Like on network TV?
Oh, it doesn't matter where it would be, but on a more regular basis, that's for certain. So if anything, I would love to be able to limit some other duties and do that even longer. But at this point right now, the balance is actually working for me. And for a balance to work for me, it's such a rare thing, Kate, that I'm going to just stick with it for a while and be very happy with it.
Right. Do you have any desire to one day produce films?
No, I do not film. My son is a director, and I'm going to leave the film business to him. Film, actually, for me, is just too slow of a process.
Ah, right.
I can't. I need to be able to churn things out and see them done. Film, I watch my son just completing a documentary. He's, you know, it takes almost a year to film it. It takes X number of months to edit it. It's a very long, drawn-out process. And my kind of body makeup, emotionally and even physically, I like to start complete, start complete, start complete.
That's wonderful. That's great. And there's a place for you just because of that. And
I'm happy there.
Right. So what was it like to interview Kirk Douglas?
That was a lot. You know, any time you have someone who, what we'll call, is legendary, there's always that little different approach to things. I used to joke, you know, it's as if you met one of the Beatles or Bob Dylan or Kirk Douglas when it comes to acting,
yes,
or Ray Bradbury when it came to writing, or Anne Rice, or Queen Noor of Jordan. I mean, you know, those things are just trippy in themselves when you get that opportunity to be around that type of presence. So and I had the privilege of my conversation with Kirk taking place after he had his stroke.
Oh.
I've had two stroke victims that I've had the, in fact, both of them are legendary to some extent. The other gentleman was a fellow named Baba Ram Dass. Do you remember Ram Dass? He wrote the book Be Here Now.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the privilege of conversing with him after his stroke. And when you speak with people who are suffering from stroke and you see that they're there, but they have to work a little bit harder to get their messages out and their words out, that becomes in itself a very unique experience.
Oh, I can imagine that it does. It makes you very grateful for your ability to speak, walk, write, eat, go to the bathroom, all those things that you don't take for granted after that.
No, and you know what was the best thing about both of these gentlemen?
What's that?
They did not feel bad even after.
Aw.
And in fact, Ram Dass himself, the whole book is based on how much he learned from having this stroke.
Absolutely.
So
attitude.
That's the real thrill.
Yes, and we have another caller. Caller, are you there? Hello?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, what's your name?
This is Dallas.
Dallas?
Yes.
Hi, thanks for calling. You have a question or comment for Barry?
I do. Barry, I love your show, and I know it's incredibly popular. I'm sure you get lots of submissions of books, and I was just wondering how many books you read a week and what how you go about choosing the books to feature on your show.
Well, you know, I this is the funniest thing. When I meet people, they always say, did you read so-and-so? Did you read so-and-so? And they really do expect me to read virtually everything that's out there, and that's obviously impossible. I'm only able to literally read the books that I'm having on the show. And the way I choose this is, it's basically, it's a combination of different sources. You know how we let the universe make some of our decisions?
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is made by the universe. In other words, because I have a finite amount of tape days, I have to be able to, you know, use the authors that are available on those tape days. So sometimes it simply is a matter of what is the best that I have to choose from based on the amount of tape days that I have. When I have an excessive amount of tape days, sometimes the budgets are more favorable and the time is more favorable, then what I do is I look through the different books that are submitted, and there are, I don't even know if people realize how big this publishing industry is, but, you know, it's hundreds and hundreds of books a month that come through the doorway. And what I do is I take a look and literally skim through, I skim through every book I get. And then I see the one that I've skimmed a few pages and say, no matter what, I can make this thing work. And so it's a combination of, you know, if I have, let's say, like available to me someone like an Anne Rice or a Ray Bradbury or an Elmore Leonard or a Joseph Wambaugh or any of the wonderful, you know, really big name authors, there's no doubt that I'm going to, you know, explore them first because my viewers will be more familiar with them. And the more familiar that my audience is, the more they can get absorbed in the conversation. So it's a combination of the book itself, the personality, and the time that I'm literally making the show. So I take all three of those things into account and then try to make the best choice possible.
Great answer. Dallas, did you have another question?
I just had one more.
Okay.
One of my favorite episodes was when you interviewed Coach John Wooden, Barry, and I was just wanted to know a little bit what that was like.
Oh, John Wooden. You talk about, you know, again, being in the presence of greatness. John Wooden is the great coach from UCLA who won 13 national championships in a row. And, again, when you're just in his presence, when I had my conversation with him, he was 94 years old, still is around and as pesky as ever, I understand. And here is a man whose life is built around wisdom. I don't know how else to describe it. The most exciting thing about it, though, when you read and you know of the great John Wooden, everyone thinks that, you know, his success was always there. What I found most moving about my conversation with John Wooden is he didn't win his first championship until he was in his 50s.
Mm.
We don't realize that it took him years and years to build, and the best part about it was John Wooden was a man and is a man who never asked his team to win. All he did was ask his team to be the best that they can be.
Mm.
That was the only requirement. And one more thing, not willingness, but as John Wooden said, with love and enthusiasm. You must live life with love and enthusiasm to the best of your ability. And those were the key points that he pushed through, whether it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Bill Walton and all the great UCLA championship teams. He never asked them to win. He only wanted them to do the best they can with joy and enthusiasm.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. So, Dallas, did that answer for you?
Yes, that was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks. Great show.
Thank you, Dallas.
Thanks.
Good night.
Bye.
Wow, that's great. As you were sharing that with Dallas, I was just wondering if you adjust your personality to the person that you're interviewing.
No.
You just remain constant
with
whoever you're
I want to be careful about that. In other words, there's some I will adjust how I'm approaching the subject matter based on the subject matter and the author and things like that. But I usually have a particular mission that I'm going for,
mm-hmm.
and stay pretty true to that, you know, as much as I can. But there's no doubt that it's a conversation. It's live. It's happening as we go. So, you know, you do make certain adjustments back and forth as you, you know, you converse with the author. But for the most part, I don't find that I have to make any sort of personality shift or anything like that. I've never had to, at least.
Okay. The reason I ask is because I know that you interviewed Chaka Khan.
Oh, what a, that was a trip, yes.
Okay, she's pretty vivacious, so that's why I asked the question. Did you find yourself feeling a lot more, like that was a lot more, the energy being different?
That always happens.
Pardon?
That always happens.
Yeah.
In other words, if a person comes in with high energy, then my energy matches it. So my energy level does match the author's. And that does happen that happens quite often. So sometimes there's two of us going at a very high energy level, and that does happen. But that's just because I'm caught up in the moment at the time.
And that's a wonderful tennis match to watch.
It's great.
Yeah, and another person that came to mind that you interviewed, which made me ask the question about do you match their energy or do you change, do you do anything different depending on which person you're interviewing? And Jackie Collins is another that comes to mind because she's very kitten-esque. And I'm just wondering what that interview was like for you.
You know, I'll tell you, Jackie Collins, if you just looked at the type of books that she writes, I believe most people would walk away with a very different impression of Jackie Collins than I had.
Hmm.
I found her to be charming, deep, lovely, even though, and she'll be the first to tell you, her books are the kind of books you're supposed to just take on the beach, rip the pages out when you're done, and that's the kind of, you know, literature she writes. She writes romance novels, and she writes them in a very, you know, appealing to a particular type of audience. But again, in the presence of our program, and I just found her to be gracious and warm and loving, and you know, you'd almost think she might be a little bit of the hoi polloi, but she was down to earth and extremely charming.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad I asked that question.
Yeah, in fact, I've been always surprised. I'm always surprised by how genuine my guests really are for the most part. And I've been blessed to have them from all ages. My youngest author, a young woman named Alice Woodburn, who she's going to be somebody you're going to be looking out for later on in life,
mm-hmm.
to my oldest author, John Wooden.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just throughout the entire spectrum. I'm always pleasantly surprised by how genuine and warm even people of mass power and high esteem and high celebrity status really are when you really just get a chance to sit down one-on-one.
Well, when I watched your programs, I actually saw a very genuine and warm host bringing out the best in his guests.
Well, thank you very much.
And that makes you a great leader in the interview because you are bringing out the best in the person because you're bringing your best to the situation. And, you know, you couldn't see genuine warmth in them unless it was present in you, and that's what you bring as a host of Between the Lines, and that's why everyone is honored when they're on your show, is because you know how to honor them properly, and that tells me that you also know how to honor yourself.
Well, you know, when we spoke the last time, you actually added that last prod about honoring myself. I still like to hold back on that one.
Right.
I'm not so sure. I have the most troubles dealing with myself. Everybody else I don't have any problems with.
I think that we all do that, and we teach what we most need to learn. And
By the way, I'd like to put an exclamation mark next to that statement, if I might. I mean, that
yes.
is definitely... so much a part of me.
Yeah. And, you know, whatever it is, you found a really wonderful way, Barry, to get your own genuine warmth and honoring yourself for yourself as you're giving that away to others. Because if you want something for yourself, you must give it away. If you want friendship, you must give it away. If you want love, you must give it away. If you want honor, you must give it away. You want respect, you must give it away. You're a master at that.
Oh, thank you, Kate. It takes one to know one, as we used to say in the schoolyard.
Okay, now you made this host blush. So, who would be your ideal guest on your show? I know all of them have been. I know that already. And who would be, if you could just select anybody, who's the one that you have in your mind's eye to bring on to interview that maybe you haven't even said to anyone else?
Wow. Oh boy, I haven't even thought about that.
I have one.
Oh, tell me yours and maybe it'll spark something.
Okay, the Dalai Lama.
Oh, very good. Now, I've had books by the Dalai Lama, and I had his co-authors on, but I never had the Dalai Lama on.
Yes.
That would be a very good one. I think that would be a great choice. Can I just steal yours and leave
you
it
can.
At that?
There's enough of him to go around. He'll be in L.A. next April.
Oh, well, I had a book of his on happiness, and that was wonderful. Sometimes, though, I find that it's the least, when I'm not expecting it, that's when that author comes on and blows me away. That's even more enjoyable than the expectation, because as we know, that expectation is always, it's a little daunting. You know, how do you live up to the expectation? I actually love the fact when I'm more surprised, especially when I meet people who I am not expecting to have a depth or a deepness of personality and soul, and then there it is.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is the true joy in discovering that element of a person.
Right, and then when they just put their guards down.
See, I'd almost expect the Dalai Lama to be deep and soulful. In a weird way, I would almost think he'd have to let me down.
You know what? Actually, he's got a wicked sense of humor.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
He's the best. One thing that he said, I watched a little video of him recently. I actually wrote a short essay about the Dalai Lama, and I sent it to his office, and I got a wonderful email back with a personal greeting from the Dalai Lama saying that he enjoyed it very, very much and thanking me profusely for writing it and sending it. So he does respond. He does get what you send. Someone tells him if they feel that it would be something that sort of rises above and really would speak to him. He does get that. So recently I invited him to be on my show, and they wrote me back a beautiful note saying all the reasons why there is enough of him to go around, and there aren't enough days and hours for him to do everything, and he would love to do the show, but he's just extremely busy. So with the Dalai Lama, he says, it was about religion, about people fighting over whose religion is the best, right? What a great question for the Dalai Lama. Why do people fight over religion? Why do people have all these different religions? And the Dalai Lama said, if I go to the same restaurant every day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, if I eat there, same food, every day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, same restaurant, and I never change the food I eat, I will stop going to that restaurant. When it comes to religion, you need to sample all of them. And it was so simple and so profound and so funny, because with his funny accent, he's got his beautiful accent. It's not.
You did a great impression, by the way. I want you to know.
Thank you. But he just really, really touched me with what he said, because it makes sense. Why not sample all of the different religions? Why not study everything? Because it all is the same thing. You know, if the ocean is God and all the rivers and streams go to the ocean, then the rivers and streams are also part of that ocean, which is God. So that means whatever religion it is, the rivers and streams are different religions and the ocean is God. Those rivers and streams are just as much God as the ocean is. So in my mind, everybody is looking for the same outcome, which is the acknowledgement of source, creator, higher power, all that is, something larger than themselves, and how they worship that or how they see that, view that, enjoy that, take that in and express that is incredibly personal. And I mean, variety is the spice of life, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. In fact, it's funny because I'm having two books on that subject this Friday on my show.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
I just love the fact that you didn't know that, I know.
Oh,
so
I didn't.
This is perfect segue.
Absolutely. Everything is perfect.
Yeah,
so when the Dalai Lama said that, I really got profoundly that you don't have to be the Dalai Lama to know that. And the way he said it was so cute and so simple and profound that I just adored it. I just thought that was the best. So he does have a great sense of humor, and of course the thousands of people there just laughed and laughed and laughed when he said that.
Well, I can assure you that if the Dalai Lama wants to come on Between the Lines, I will schedule my entire tape schedule around him.
Well, I will send an email to them and present that.
Perfect.
Okay, great.
I have two guests like that. I have a few guests like that where I'll schedule around them.
I like that idea. That's very, very kind and generous of you, and you'll probably get everybody you want to be on your show because of that. I would like to ask you now, Barry. We're coming up on the last 2 minutes of the Spiritual Hollywood Hour.
No, wait a minute. I must comment upon this. You know, you said to me, I don't know if it was on the air.
It was before we went on the air.
Before the air. You said this would be the fastest thing. I do a half-hour show.
Uh-huh.
And my authors always can't believe that the half hour is up.
Right.
I cannot believe this was an hour.
Yes.
Unbelievable, Kate.
Absolutely.
You know, you praised me throughout the entire interview, and I just want to say kudos back to you.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'd like you to take the next 60 seconds, if you would, reach inside your heart, find that nugget in there that needs to come out in this interview. I'm sure there are gazillions of them that did come out, and there's just one more in there that wants to come out. If you trusted yourself, even if you don't know what it is, and just said what was there, what would it be?
It would be that I just wish all of us, including myself and everyone on this planet, could just feel blessed, appreciative, grateful, and most importantly, treat themselves with as much kindness as possible.
Honoring the self, yes, spoken from someone who really does and just doesn't know that he does.
That's okay.
Yes, thank you so much, Barry, for being on the show this evening.
Kate,
I am
a
just
true
grateful.
Pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. And that website again is www.klcs, that's K-L-C as in cat, S as in Sam, .org. And go check that out. And I'd like to invite everybody now to stand up really straight, take a really deep breath, and love yourselves. And remember, the last six letters of attraction are action. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week. Have a good night. Bye-bye.